Hello, Rachel.
Hello, Ryan. How are you?
Oh, you know me. When things are tough, I just crawl back inside the bottle. When things are tough, I crawl back inside the... Did you get it? Did you pick it up? Did you... Me saying it a couple of times, did that hammer in the point of what I'm saying? That when things are tough, I get back in the bottle. I just thought we need to clarify that it's said a few times, so that must mean it means that it's important. And I won't change the wording around either time I use it. It's when things get tough, I crawl back inside the bottle. So, Rachel, we are here as the Yum Yum podcast to discuss...
But are you going to mention the model ship that's in the bottle with you?
No. So, when I was a young boy, I used to make ships and bottles. Did you do that? No. I was never a boy. anything to distract us from the Babylon 5 episode that we revisited for this one? Of course, we're a Yum Yum podcast because of the iconic line of dialogue. Yum Yum, Rachel, inform us all about the iconic line of dialogue, Yum Yum.
It was given to us by the divine, the holy, Commander Nandi in the dumpster fire that is Star Trek Discovery.
They should have called it Star Trek Yum Yum.
And our lives and the nature of pop culture has never been the same since.
No, and now we are covering Babylon 5 because we're out of Discovery and we're rewatching the show, so that does mean there will be plot details from this that will be exposed. That's right, if you haven't seen Babylon 5, why are you listening? This is a spoiler-centric podcast, and we revisited an episode from season one, but which episode are we talking about?
We're up to episode 11, entitled Ooh. Survivors. Mm. Now, Ryan, I'm going to read the description, but it ain't no normal IMDb description.
Oh, okay. Is this some DVD description?
Yes.
Written by JMS himself, probably, maybe. Who knows?
Most likely. That's
Let's say it's
a
him.
Theory.
He's to blame.
No, he deserves credit.
Yes. He wrote the description for this episode, but did not write the script for this episode. So let's hear it.
He's made many enemies.
JMS? He's made many enemies.
Excuse you?
I got a lot of enemies.
He's made many enemies, and now Garibaldi's future is on the line. Framed for sabotage. The embattled security chief flees to the station's Simi. Down below, only one person can be relied upon. Sinclair, the commander, he's loyally served for years.
Sinclair factors in, but not majorly. Major Kimmer factors in majorly.
Mm-hmm. Liana.
You were watching this that first time. We were watching this together that first time. But could you recollect for the podcast what your experience was seeing this one all those years ago?
I was intrigued by a Garibaldi-centric plot. I was like, oh, this is going to be a proper Garibaldi episode. And that is true. Can't say that that's a lie. It may not be a great one, but it is one. I remember feeling confused by this episode because I was just like, it feels very different than the way that the other ones have been. It's a clear departure. And I was like, oh, I don't think I like this.
Yeah, I hate this episode.
Oh.
I have always hated this episode, and I hate it now.
I don't think it gets that much
energy.
It's
the worst episode of season one to me. It has little to any redeeming factors to it.
Oh, I liked some of the
You can talk about what
details.
You like. You can like talk about what you like, but I'm telling
but
you my history with the episode and my current relationship with it is... This is my least favorite episode of season one. This is the most throwaway, yet it is the important Garibaldi-centric episode. Yet I feel like, and I have always felt like, they could have delivered the information of him being a fuck-up and an alcoholic far more subtly than they do here. Oh,
they ain't going for subtlety. And they've already subtly established it in the other episodes and in the pilot movie.
This episode has always felt skippable. That is the way to describe it. It is boring, it is bland, it is poorly done. It does not feel like it's enriching me to the character of Garibaldi. It is not feeling like it is giving me anything new. In fact, it feels like it takes away from this character. I've never liked this episode, and I continue to not like this episode. Does it have some minor moments of joy? Of course, Londo's here. Jakar's here, Sinclair, Vonnegut, they're all here, but like...
I see, thinking even more micro than that.
Yes. But... I mean, Nograth is here in his final real appearance, and he, of course, was the person to have said yum yum if given the chance.
Yes.
We didn't even need to ask that question earlier in the episode, because Nograth's here. We know it's a standard.
I think Cutter is a second choice.
Maybe. Maybe that random alien but guy, like... Dagul, or whatever his name was, Bagul.
Yeah, like... I for ones that just appear in this episode, I think Cutter.
Yeah, but Lou Welch is here. He would have said yum yum because he heard there was a cake. He's always knowing there's a cake somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But you like this episode more than I do. And
yes.
I think it's good to talk about the positives first, because renowned this episode is for being one of the poor entries in the show. Many people do not like this episode and or find it just to be middling. I've rarely met a person who says this is one of the good episodes, let alone one of the best episodes for either the show or for Garibaldi as a character.
Yeah.
So let's talk positives. Let's get in there right now. Rachel, what are some of the things that you enjoy about this episode?
Well, I enjoy Londo. I enjoy Sinclair. I enjoy Ivanova. I enjoy Jakar. So, like, those performances are still very much solid.
Well, let's zoom in on those. What particular moments stand out to you from any of these characters, and why do they work in comparison to the thing that doesn't work, which is Garibaldi, who we usually like.
Mm-hmm.
So, Londo. We like Londo. We've talked about him many a times before. We like our sad clown boy.
Yeah.
He's here in one scene.
Sad clowny in this one. His whole, like, black sheep analogy of, like, wanting to...
The odd man out.
Fight them and get back at them and prove that men like, or just people like them, don't always have to lose.
Mm-hmm. So, for context, Garibaldi's on the run at this point in the story, and he stops by the casino to get some help from his good old friend, and then some answers from Ambassador Londo Malari. Londo's actually happy until Garibaldi arrives, because he's just won a shitload of money, the goddess of luck and fortune, or whatever it was. You know, gambling and all that has smiled upon him, so he's got money conveniently to give to Garibaldi, so that was nice. I agree, Londo's great in this episode, in the one scene.
Yeah.
He reminds me of the one from the pilot. Like, he reminds me of Londo from The Gathering, in which he's very over the top, he's gambling, he's laughing about, but when he's with Garibaldi, that kind of fades away, and you get this stripped back melancholic figure that he does give to Garibaldi. He doesn't give that characterization to many other people in the show.
No. It's a side of Londo that he hides because he doesn't feel safe with many people.
Well, do you think it is that he hides that, or do you think that this is something he puts on for Garibaldi? Because they do point out that their relationship is one of usage. Like, he says straight up, like, you think I would do such a thing to you? It's like, I know you would. It's like, yes, I would. I would do that to you. Ha, 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 ha. But
yeah.
I didn't.
I do think that their friendship isn't a genuine one. It isn't a deep one. It's still a friendship nonetheless, and I do think it is based on the way that they use each other and that they But that comes from them understanding each other.
Yes, they understand that dynamic as well. Yeah. Like, there's no fooling each other about that. Londo will fool himself about that relationship next season. Mm. But I think it is interesting that Garibaldi's the only human Londo treats like a friend or like a real friend. He will say, my good, dear friend, to lots of people, but he rarely does act out on that, except for with Garibaldi. Mm. He'll want to have a drink with him, want to have a chat with him. And yes, it's the dynamic is to have something in exchange for the most part. But they both know that, and they're both content with that knowledge between the friendship.
And I was reading that scene in a little bit of a different light on this rewatch. And I'm like, I don't know if I fully believe this, but I was like, tried out a new angle, which was that, like, part of their friendship and part of that scene is them as two addicts.
I can see that because, read too.
Like,
because that's what this issue's dealing with.
Yeah. Of, like, they peg us for one thing and we can do better than what they think we can do. Because on this rewatch, I'm just like, Londo is clearly a gambling addict, right?
Oh, and a drunk.
Like, and a drunk. Like, those are addictions that have developed out of coping mechanisms.
Yeah, I think, and again, I'm not that knowledgeable when it comes to, you know, addiction stuff like alcoholism and stuff. So I don't know if I could strongly say that Londo is someone with actual addiction problems, because he doesn't suffer them in the ways that Garibaldi does. Like,
but Londo, he relies on them.
He does rely on them.
That's what I think is essential to making something an addiction, is relying on it.
Yeah.
Like, he can't cope without it. And then that's what we also see Garibaldi struggling with.
Well, I think it's hard to say, too, because they take Londo in such a different direction as the show goes along. But what I was going to say was, and this is still something addicts do, I mean, Trainspotting even showed this, which is Londo can easily stop drinking and gambling, because we see him do that, and survive, and rarely, if ever, need the temptation to do it again. That's mainly because in the show, he's too busy and isn't afforded the opportunities anymore to gamble or to drink in the way that he used to, because people want to use him now.
Yeah.
But it's not in the same way that Garibaldi is unable to drink and party and do all that stuff again. But I see where you're coming from. I think what's interesting, too, is Londo is manipulating Garibaldi in the scene as well, because he's talking about how they're the odd man out and they're these and they're the underdogs. I also feel a level of manipulation there to buy into this narrative of woe is me that Londo always has.
Oh, yeah.
Because although they're black sheep as people, I wouldn't describe Garibaldi the way that Londo is describing Garibaldi. And maybe that's how Londo genuinely feels about Garibaldi and himself. But it is a part of Londo's character, is he always weaves these narratives about himself, the Centauri, and about other people. And he wants you to believe these narratives that he is putting down. Even if he believes them himself, they're still constructions that he puts there for people to be a part of. And I feel like that's a part of the scene as well, like just subtly there. I'm not saying Londo's being an evil manipulator here. I just think that's a part of his character.
We are both, as you say, the odd man out. I have been in your place. I can feel how you are pinned. And it would give me some small pleasure to know that things can work out, even for us.
Then we have Jakar, who I loved in this episode.
He nails it. And, like,
As I
was watching that scene, I was like, oh, I kind of want to write that line down. I want to write that one down too. I want to mention that one. But I think the one that we have to address.
Yeah.
There's another one that's a contender, but I want to quote this one first.
Yeah.
And he's like, there are three things that, like, rule the universe. Energy, matter, and enlightened self-interest.
That's exactly what this era of Jakar thinks as
yeah.
well. And that tells you so much about what he's motivated by. I think the writer of this episode should have written an alien-centric episode because I felt like they didn't have a grasp on who the human characters were. As in, I've seen these characters and they didn't feel true, a lot of them, like especially Garibaldi and Sinclair, they didn't feel true to the characters we've been experiencing, but the aliens did. Like, lines like that in the Londo scene, it felt like the person who wrote this episode was really tuned into
the... And the Nagrath scene. The Nagrath scene.
The Nagrath scene, of course.
Was pitch perfect.
Pitch perfect, as always, is every Nagrath scene. But I really felt like this writer was more tuned into those alien characters, but was designated the Garibaldi episode. And the Jakar scene is a great example of that, because in the scene, Jakar is written exactly like Jakar needs to, but Garibaldi, completely off during the scene. As much as I want to love the Jakar scene, I love Jakar in the scene. I don't love Garibaldi in the scene. Garibaldi feels
And do
too...
not love the scene itself. Overall.
I can't love the scene itself as a whole, but I do love Jakar in it. And there is that moment from Jakar as well in which I love he's so openly honest during this discussion about, like, I've been taking an interest because I want to see how it benefits me. And I love how he describes... It's a great idea, and I probably would do it, but I didn't think of it. Like, he's just openly honest about that. He just admits, yeah, I would do that, but this time it wasn't me. I actually didn't think of this plan. Pretty clever plan, though. And you could almost feel like he's noting this down in his brain as something to do in the future.
He's adding it to his playbook.
He's adding it to his playbook. What do you like about this Jakar sequence of events and how Jakar's portrayed in this episode? Because he's different again from where we saw him in Mind War and
I like
Deathwalker.
Politically wise Jakar. We got a glimpse of that when he's talking to and save Sinclair's girlfriend.
Yeah, in Mind War.
In Mind War. And I like that he is very astute and he doesn't pretend like the game of politics is something that is superior. He brings it back down.
The way also... how he is the opposite of Londo in this episode, because Londo's using this flowery dialogue and being self-pitying and self-serving. Jakar knows exactly what he is and is very upfront about it. Londo is upfront too, but he's in more of a, like, a politician-y mode, you know, like, he's softening the edges, but Jakar just is saying, yep, this is that, and I don't give a shit what you think about, like, when Jakar is told by Garibaldi, I assume it was you because we've locked horns in the past. It's like, no, that is true, we have, but I didn't do it this time, buddy. Didn't do it this time.
And you just believe him off the bat, and so does Garibaldi.
Yeah, because we're beginning to note down that Jakar is far more of an honest character than we initially were set up with him to be. In the pilot, he was a deceptive character. He was always... having plots and schemes and always lying, but now the show has realized that that's a very limiting factor for this character.
Yeah.
And it's far more enjoyable to see him flaunt his nature in front of everyone and just own it for the most part. And I think that's what works about the scene is he mirrors Londo's scene, but he's still unique from it. And also just... it's nice that the two alien ambassadors help Garibaldi out in some minor way or another.
Unlike the ambassadors in Believers.
Unlike the ambassadors in Believers or unlike them in Deathwalker, this time they're being slightly helpful because this is a character-centric episode. Mm-hmm. So narratively, you need them to be, but also it adds to this feeling like these people know each other. I was going to say friends, but they're not friends. But, like, they know Garibaldi, mm-hmm. and they know that he didn't do this, and they can't manipulate this in the way that they could if given the opportunity at another mm-hmm. time.
Yeah.
So there's nothing, like Jakar said a few episodes back, there's nothing to gain here right now. He's like, he's not going to gain anything turning Garibaldi in.
No.
Which, if this was the pilot version of Jakar, they would have made some contrived reason why he would do that, just because he was evil for evil's mm-hmm. sake.
The universe is run by the complex interweaving of three elements: energy, matter, and enlightened self-interest. Unless you comprehend that fact, and soon, you will be cornered and caged. They will destroy you.
Maybe I'd rather be dead.
They won't give you death. They'll just take everything you value and leave you with nothing.
I do like Sinclair. I like the way that he's using the faults of the system for his own gain.
Mm-hmm.
When he's dealing with the Major. He's
using the rule book against them.
And I like that Ivanova is doing the same thing, especially when she orders that maintenance. And I'm like, oh, fuck yes.
Ivanova was on point this episode, I'll say. She seemed accurate.
Loved the line of like, oh, that's very Russian of you. I'm impressed.
Yeah, when she's talking to Garibaldi at the start and he's all Mr. I don't trust anything or anyone, including the government. It's like, yeah, that's Russian
and
of you.
And one of the little things that I liked is that it was a low gravity area, so everybody had like their hand on the rails.
Yeah.
And they were like riding the weird train system that they have.
And that's a setup in a way for the finale of season two where Sheridan falls in low gravity. That's nice. I've never thought about that. They mentioned the low gravity, the different sections of gravity in the pilot as well. So there's a nice follow through. Ivanova was really good in this episode for the most part. I liked how she reminded us that she is a boss, like she's a military boss lady, because it seems like for the last little while, Ivanova's just been in scenes to remind us that she's in the show. And that's not negative. Like, I love the character, but I like seeing her exercise her authority in this episode and relish in exercising her authority over someone she didn't like. Of course, you like the maintenance scene. I like the scene in which Major Kimmer is demanding things from Ivanova, and Ivanova's like, I'm a lieutenant commander in Earth Force. I don't take demands. I take requests. Okay. Can I request that you... No. Denied. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Go fuck off. Mm. It was perfection. Like, we've talked about this before, but what do you like about Ivanova as a character, and how is that effective in this episode?
See, I thought we would be discussing those sort of questions about Garibaldi with this episode.
We will, but the problem is he doesn't work in this episode for myself.
No, and I agree with that, but I'm like, I don't know how to synthesize my feelings on Ivanova. I do like that she's a boss bitch and that she really owns it, and that at no point does she apologize for that. And there are points where she questions whether she regrets it or not. But the way that she responds to that feels true to who she is, not what lots of other writers would do, which is like, oh no, she realizes that she's missing out and, you know, we're like, oh no, Ivanova realizes that she does just want to be a basic bitch and she wants to return to Earth and marry a nice man and have babies.
Right.
But that's not what JMS does with her, and that wouldn't feel right for Ivanova either. It would feel like, oh, what
saves the character from being too cold and or abrasive? Because she's on the other end of the spectrum of being very cold and abrasive to many people in the narrative of the show, but how come that doesn't affect us, the viewer? How come that doesn't alienate us from her?
There's a level of charm to her, and charisma to the performance, and it isn't like she's a robot. Like, if she was played by Missy Pyles, then, you know, it would give a very different vibe.
It would be funnier. I think it's the humor. I think,
yeah,
as much as the tragic backstory to her humanizes her, if there was no humor to her character, if she was a humorless character, we would find her dreary and miserable to spend time with. But here, she's very funny in this episode. That's the thing. She's very, very funny in an otherwise joyless episode. Mm-hmm. She's very funny. And I think that's what makes her character work, is the humor.
Yeah.
In a show like this, the humor could make or break a character, because she's not a comedic relief character.
No.
She's not what Veer is, right? But if you stripped away Ivanova's sense of humor, which does evolve as the show goes along, because JMS understood Claudia Christian's comedic strengths that were different to what he had initially set up for this character, if you strip her comedic side away, you would have a far lesser character.
Mm-hmm.
And Sinclair is not comedic, but if you stripped his warmth away, you would have less as well. Because I think what makes him work in this episode, because I have issues with Sinclair in this episode, I think they write him like an idiot.
Yeah.
I think they make him make poor decisions and or poor calls at certain times. But what I think makes him work still, in spite of all of that, is he has this warmth and camaraderie with his crew. And as a previous guest once talked about, our friend Bartek, when he gets pissed off and he asserts his authority, he owns that. And you root for him when he does that, and you feel vindicated when he does that. Because Michael O'Hare had that presence and that voice that carries through the authority that maybe the script doesn't. Because on the script, all he's saying is, I'm respect me, blah, power. But Michael O'Hare delivers those lines with utmost authority, and you believe it.
Ivanova, all security posts, cancel fugitive alert immediately.
If you insist on obstructing me, Commander, I have no choice but to invoke presidential authority.
And I'm sick of that, too. This is my station, and it's time you realize that. Lieutenant Commander Ivanova, escort Major Kamarov the observation dome.
With pleasure. You are going to resist, I hope.
I have two words that are positive. Lou Welch.
Oh, well, yeah, I knew I was saving Lou for you.
Lou Welch is one of those characters in which he has no actual purpose in the story other than to be there. He's a bold security guard guy with barely any lines of dialogue. He has barely a character written for him. Yet when you see him and you hear his name, that's the thing that's important. He looks like a Lou Welch.
Yeah.
I don't know how that works, but he looks like Lou Welch. When you see that guy, you're like, that's Lou Welch.
Calls for him.
Welch! It's great. And
like, get me Lou Welch.
And you look at this guy and you go, yeah, he's a security guy. Yeah, and he stands out because of his striking look, the bulky frame, the bold head, that mean look on his face, but he looks like a doofus as well. Like, he has that kind of, you know, blank-eyed look to him, and I appreciate Lou Welch, and this is his first appearance.
Mm-hmm.
Lou Welch is the proto Zach Allen, and I love Lou Welch, and I wish we got him to the end of the show. I wish he came back after season two, where he kind of fades away to the side. But Lou Welch is here, and this is what this episode delivers. And also, as stated, this is the last McGrath episode of note. He will make a brief cameo, I think, in the background of a shot in season five. But this is last full-on McGrath experience, and it may be one of the best McGrath experiences, because you're teaming him up with Security Chief Michael Garibaldi, and he's the smartest fucking character in the episode, because he's like, no, you're still a cop.
Yeah, like, you're always gonna be a cop.
And
like,
I hope you're just gonna arrest me later.
Yeah, like, screw you. I'm not helping you now or ever.
Also, it was great because this is the worst the prop of McGrath has ever looked in the show.
And he's very poorly lit. Right?
I thought it was different, but then the more he talked, the more it sounded like previous episodes. But then there were some points in which he sounded different. I don't know if it was like the voice modulation which was changed for this, or maybe we've just not heard him talk that much in one go. Because usually it's like, price too high. In this, like, he had full sentences of dialogue. Could you imagine a monologue from him? Could you imagine him doing the "my shoes are too tight, but it doesn't matter because I've forgotten how to dance"? Could you imagine that? "My shoes are too tight." I would love that. JMS, listening, I know you're listening. Make it happen. Make it happen. Make it an animated thing. I don't care. Make it happen right now. You'll have my money right now. That's it. That's the positives in Survivors. Very few positives for a show we otherwise love and always find positives in. And it's time to get into those negatives. I think this episode's biggest crime, its biggest crime, is that the character of Michael Garibaldi and the character of Major Kimura and Cutter all feel like idiots. This is what I would describe as an idiot plot, in which everything hinges on everyone being idiots.
It feels oddly underbaked. And it feels like...
But overwritten!
This... It's so odd, because we've had better episodes where we were like, this B-plot feels like it was chucked in to fill in time. Mm-hmm. And it feels like they got to this one and they were like, oh, we're out of those. I guess we'll just stretch the A-plot.
And the sky full of stars.
Mm-hmm.
All A-plot, barely any B-plot, all on one character being tortured and looking at their dark past. This is the Garibaldi version of that. And how much does it fucking suck?
It stinks.
It stinks. It's stinky. It's pooey. No thank you. The price is way too high for this stink. But do you agree or disagree with my general problem of the main lot of characters that perpetuate the story feel stupid and feel like idiots and keep making bad decisions?
Yeah. Like, Babylon 5 at its best and lots of shows at its best, you forget that these characters are pawns. Mm. And in this, you really feel that. You really feel like they have no agency and like the writer is writing, we got to go from A to B, B to C, C to D. And it's... so bland. Mm-hmm. But not just that. Because we've seen these characters be and do better, it's even more disappointing. Because it's just like, no, you don't have to do these characters this way. What went wrong?
I think the episode on every level took shortcuts. This feels like the cheapest episode of the show thus far. It has the worst effects, the worst acting, the worst casting, the worst direction, the worst action sequences, the worst lines of dialogue, and just story construction, scene construction, themes, arcs. It's so ham-fisted. It's so underbaked and yet overwritten. There were many moments in which I go, okay, the writer's writing right now. I'm feeling it, but okay, they could maybe get away with it if they end here. But nope, they keep having more lines of dialogue on top of the scene that just keep going on and on and on. And it just makes me roll my eyes. Oh, and the worst music in the show as well. The music was fucking atrocious in this episode. It was so telling and so manipulative and so dated. I don't have a problem with B5's music.
Yeah.
I like it for the most part. But every now and then it will come up with this very dated quality to it. And this is a very 1990s episode. The fucking costumes are terrible in this episode too.
I couldn't put my finger on some things. I was like, this scene feels extra shit. What is it? It was the music.
Oh, yeah. And the costumes were also pretty bad.
Oh, yeah. And... you really feel the whole lot of rubber that's in this.
Oh, yeah.
Like, even more than usual, it's like, oh, that's made of rubber and that's made of rubber. And
the plot's made of rubber.
Like, I sniggered so hard when the alien is attacking Garibaldi.
Dugul. Oh, and Dugul. Then a bunch of Drassis drop from the sky? What the fuck was that?
That I just wanted to laugh at.
What the fuck was that?
But the part that I sniggered at was the like the rubber chain hitting the rubber box.
And then a spark shooting. Hey, was this Spark's first role? And then they went on to do Star Trek Discovery?
Oh my god.
Spark's got their start in fucking Babylon 5 and they work their way up to fucking Star Trek Discovery.
They're a main character.
In this, they're an extra, but in Discovery, they're a main character. Sparks. Unnecessary Sparks. Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
You're really amused with Sparks. I am too.
I just like that because they were baby Sparks.
Yeah, this is what I mean. This is baby Sparks. Cousin of baby Spice.
Jeff, what are you doing here?
Trying to keep you from frying your own butt. Luckily, I monitor the security reports on your whereabouts.
Sorry you missed most of the fun.
If I'd missed any more of the fun, you'd be a smear on the floor. I've got to get you to med lab.
The character work in this episode, as I stated, hinges on everyone being idiots. And that I really mean is everyone having the drama unfold because it has to. Major Kimmer has to be a jerk, because if she's a jerk, it will push Garibaldi to act irresponsibly, so then he will spiral back into his alcoholism, so then the episode could have something to say about alcoholism. And then they can win the end of the day by punching some guy called Cutter in the face. And the character work is so, so manipulative and told to us. This episode is
so... Oh, but Ryan, she didn't even cry.
She died inside that day. I died inside that day. And then at the end he says, we both died inside that day. In case you didn't get it, we have to repeat it again. This episode is one of the ones that's the most exposition heavy. And in other episodes, we had that issue because it was them trying to world build and we could almost excuse it, but we still grilled it for being too exposition heavy. Here, there's no fucking excuses because this is all character centric, yet it's so exposition heavy. The writing is so upfront and telling us how to feel, what to feel, and not letting us experience those emotions. It's the dialogue telling us what those emotions are, and you just walk away going, well, the dialogue told me what to experience here. There was no room to actually feel anything that was happening in this episode. Like, the big one, how did you feel when you saw Garibaldi take a drink?
Well, the show is clearly telling us that we should be sad, disappointed, and just appalled by his decision.
It sounds like you were.
And I was just like, okay, I'm meant to feel those things. And I feel nothing.
Why? We like Garibaldi. So don't you feel bad that Garibaldi is doing something harmful to himself?
No, it's that odd thing. Because we don't see him struggle with this. Like, we're just told that he's a recovering alcoholic over and over and over and over and over again.
In this episode.
But that's something that happens in all of the show. Like, we get a better grip on it later when he has another relapse, I think.
Yeah, I think it's because we don't really buy him falling back into drinking again because of this issue.
Yeah.
When he relapses into alcoholism again later in the show, I understand why he does that. I'm disappointed, I'm sad, and I'm worried for him. But from a narrative perspective, I understand why he relapses. Yeah. Here, it only feels like it's so that they could let us know concretely that this is an issue he has and that he can easily fall back into it again. But it doesn't feel genuine.
No. It feels forced and heavy-handed. And, like, that's just the way that the entire script is written.
Yeah, it's very forced, heavy-handed. And what's it actually saying about this issue, though? What did you walk away with? What did it say, and did you actually feel that?
I don't know. Like, clearly, alcoholism bad is a tenet of this theme that they're getting at. And it feels like maybe it was meant to be, like, you need to take sobriety a day at a time, and, like, you're only one drink away from a relapse kind of thing, but that isn't really what it says either. I don't think it really says anything clearly enough.
Is it? I don't think so, necessarily. I think the most I get from this is, oh, interesting, Garibaldi's backstory is revealed to me now because they've been hinting at it, and it is that he's an alcoholic. Okay, file that one away because you know that the show will make it come back up again. That's all it feels like. It feels like a checklist. Like, check, we let the audience know he's an alcoholic. Not check, we made the audience feel anything about that. It's check, the knowledge has been transferred to the audience. The audience now has that Wikipedia file. It doesn't feel any. It doesn't feel like anything.
No.
And then at the end, there's this moment in which I go, okay, maybe this is a 1990s thing, maybe we're looking at it nowadays, or this is just another general incompetence of the episode, or maybe this is a genuine thing, and maybe this is the best piece of advice, and I'm just ignorant. Again, I don't know these things, but at the end, Garibaldi says he feels bad about having fallen so quickly and so easily, but he feels extra bad because of how much he enjoyed it. And all Sinclair has to offer is, well, Michael, next time you do it, don't fight it alone. Come to me. And that feels like such hollow, weak source advice, not just from Sinclair, but from the show itself. It feels so empty. It doesn't feel like there's anything, like, it doesn't feel like that's a statement that's really fully realized from someone outside, like, from someone who's the non-alcoholic trying to reach out and help. All it feels like is, well, they even said, but you saved the day in the end, Michael. Like, they say that basically.
Like, you didn't fuck up that badly because you didn't fuck up your job. Because
yeah,
in
it worked
all
out this
of
time.
These other instances, you fell back into your alcoholism and you got fired. But you didn't get fired, so the fact that you got drunk doesn't matter as much as those other times.
Yeah.
And this time you made sure that nobody died.
Yeah, and the general sentiment of, well, it worked out this time, makes Sinclair feel like a bad friend in this moment, or an oblivious one, because Garibaldi isn't talking necessarily. And again, maybe he is, and the script is doing such a poor job at what I think it was supposed to be doing, which is, I interpret it as, Garibaldi's not saying, oh, I could have fucked this all up and blah, blah, blah. I'm also thinking he's talking about the fact that he feels bad that he relapsed. And Sinclair has to say, well, it worked out this time, so it doesn't really matter that you relapsed. Like, the results didn't end in death, so you relapsing doesn't really matter to me. But if it does happen again, let me know. It feels like they've completely misunderstood the dynamic between these two friends.
Not only that.
Misunderstood the issue that Garibaldi was actually communicating. It wasn't just the fear of letting the president die, but it was more the fear that he easily fell back into an addiction issue.
Not only that, but it puts a weird sort of band-aid on, well, he's back on the road to recovery now.
Yeah. It was just for this episode.
Yeah.
For now.
Yeah.
And if it does happen again, will he actually seek help from Sinclair? That could be some drama in the future that we could see play out between these two friends. it's very hackneyed and very bad. And I don't know if the messaging about the addiction issues is well done or not, but I don't think it is in this particular one. You don't feel it. And when you do, all you feel is the hand of the writer coming in.
I think we can say with certainty that this show deals with addiction better in other storylines.
Oh, 100%. And better for Garibaldi.
Yeah, and a part of that is not just consigning it to one episode.
When things get too rough, I crawl right back into the damn bottle. What really scares me is how much I enjoyed it.
But you crawled back out again and did the job. That's what counts.
Yeah, I got lucky. What happens next time?
Hopefully there won't be a next time. But if there is, promise me something. You won't try and fight the battle alone.
This is supposed to be Garibaldi on the run. Garibaldi has to outsmart and outthink his entire security crew and outthink Major Kimmer and even Sinclair. But every single time he does do that, it's embarrassing because of the production.
He just runs away. Well, like, that's how he outsmarts them. It's just that they look away and then
he runs away.
No,
but that could work, but it's done so piss poorly because it is, like, it's embarrassing. Like, how does he escape the situation of being arrested in the first place? Do you remember? Do you remember how he got away from Major
Kimmer?
When they're outside his quarters. And they're like, we found all the evidence and we're going to arrest you. Do you remember actually how he got away?
Our clever security guy? He punches somebody.
He kicks Cutter in the groin and runs away.
I didn't realize it was the groin.
Or the shin. You can't tell it's too quick of a shot. Again, poor direction of action.
He just goes boop and runs away.
And he keeps doing that. And it doesn't make him seem clever. Like, he doesn't. Okay. We have that moment in which they say, okay, you have to get into the ambassadorial wing, but that'll be really tough. And he goes, nah, I can sort it out. And then he just sorts it out. There's no cleverness to it. The cleverest part is also the stupidest part, which is him going to McGrath. Because obviously that wouldn't work. Obviously it wouldn't work. Because McGrath hates you. You're the cop. And that's the only slightly clever thing. Everything else of him evading and outsmarting people and getting in this place and getting at that place is all done boilerplate level of he kicks and runs his way out, and or somebody else saves his butt, or somebody else gives him information, and then he goes, aha! He doesn't solve the crisis at the end on his own.
All down to luck.
Lou Welch is the hero of this episode because he went to the guy's quarters and found all of this paraphernalia.
Bless Lee.
Wouldn't it have been better if one of the scenes in this episode was him, Garibaldi, breaking into that guy's thing and finding the evidence?
Yeah, but wasn't it even Cutter's stuff?
No. It was the guy who died.
Yeah, it was the guy who died, which
makes Garibaldi said he had a thing against him already. Like, wouldn't it have been narratively more interesting to see him go there instead of to McGrath? Have a whole sequence of him outsmarting his men and fucking with security things to distract them to go over there, or getting this something. Just something to make him look intelligent rather than just a guy who runs around and then eventually gets drunk because the script needs that to happen. So then they could capture him easily. And so then the bad guy can be like, I've got him where I want him and now I'm going to do my plan. It's embarrassing stuff. This is an embarrassing episode of TV for Babylon 5.
You got a real nice place here. Oh, great ambiance, terrific decor, friendly people. Yeah, this place should be on all the charter tours. See and experience the real Babylon 5.
Is there much else to say here?
I don't have anything else that I really want to add.
It's just the simple stuff of there are things that tie into other things. They mention the Home Guard. President Santiago is coming on the ship, on the station. There's this whole dramatic irony of, hey, make sure to look after the president. And she's like, I will, but we know that that doesn't happen. He dies. That's not satisfying on the rewatch, though, because it is just there in an episode that doesn't have anything else to it. Like,
yeah,
that's not a substitution for sustenance of the actual episode and substance of the actual episode.
No, but it does feel like there could have been something here.
Mm.
And it does feel like potential was wasted because they tried to wrap up everything too neatly in one episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is one where if the show never touched his alcoholism again, you wouldn't have been left hanging in comparison to if they never touched Sinclair's missing time again.
And if you missed this episode when it was originally airing,
oh, you missed nothing.
And you could tune in next week, you would be like, okay.
This episode does a really terrible job writing the character of Garibaldi because we have gotten to know Garibaldi, but this is the show revealing an aspect that we've been questioning about him since the very beginning. Why does this feel as if it does a poor job writing this specific character?
It's lazy and boilerplate. Like, I'm having trouble bringing something to this discussion because the episode barely brings anything itself.
Mm-hmm. I think it's because he doesn't have the personality we've known him to bestow in the series at any point here, for the most part, except for, like, the talk with Ivanova at the beginning. He's very soap opera-y, the character. He's very, yeah. He died that day and I died too. And it's not to say that you can't introduce these elements to this character. This is still in that phase of the show in which we're learning about these characters. But it feels so, I don't know why it feels so artificial. Like, if I said to you, I'm a writer and I'm going to write the Garibaldi episode and I want to bring up his tragic story, you would, as an audience member, hear that and go, well, we're going to see a tragic side to Garibaldi, which we do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, like, it just feels wrong. It doesn't feel true to this character. Not the story itself, but the way this is presented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's contrived. Like I was saying earlier, it just goes from A to B because we need this thing here and we're going to move from Act 2 to 3. So we need this kind of thing here. And there's nothing that levels it up. Mm. There's no investment in the characters. There's no investment in the plot. The themes are told, but not explored. And then a lot of the acting is bad.
Yeah, Jerry Doyle was terrible in this episode. Outright bad. I think, and I haven't complained about his acting because I haven't minded it, but this one, he is atrocious. Very poorly done from him, and I blame the direction, I have to, and the script, because he hasn't been this bad before. It really does feel like Jerry Doyle and the script and the character and the director and whoever were saying, now you've been playing Garibaldi like Garibaldi, but now this is award contender Garibaldi. Like, it feels like he went full.
Mm-hmm.
Full, like, ooh, I'm an actor now.
Sad Garibaldi. I've got to channel the sadness.
I've got to use my TV career experience for this one, guys. So
I killed this man that was like my brother.
I'm going to squirt a couple from my eyes for this one. It really does feel so false. And I think another aspect, and this is something too, where it's not wrong to do this, but for some reason, it just doesn't land because of the character of the show at this point. All of our characters who have had their personal stories, whether it be the main plot or the B plot, have been sensible. Like, Londo is a silly character, but when we get introduced to his being somebody trapped in this status of being forever in purgatory and yet yearning for the past, he doesn't feel like he has a future. We understand it because he says it with an absolute sensibility to him and a humility to him. Ivanova, her story, very tragic. Sinclair says it very sensibly. He's got anger. Jakar, although silly in his stories thus far, he's tonally accurate. Garibaldi, it doesn't feel like he's treating this, like the character is being written sensibly here, rather than they're written to be dramatic. And dramatic in terms of causing drama, not actually being of gravitas.
Everything feels like it's just there to hit a certain beat. And none of the work goes in behind that. So everything feels hollow. Everything feels artificial. And then at that point, you notice the cheapness even more. So you notice that level of artificiality. And it just snowballs.
Yeah, and you can see why, to me, this is the worst episode in season one. Because TKO is often referred to as the worst one.
And it's one that you use as a touchstone
It's a shit episode. But the Ivanova aspect of that story, right? We're being introduced to a side of We're being introduced into a side of her life, her spirituality, that we were not familiar with about her.
Here's
something. I am someone who's not an alcoholic. I don't have any family members I do know to be alcoholics. So this story should, in a way, open that world to me so I can better understand it. That's a part of what this is supposed to do. Oh, my security chief character is an alcoholic? Whoa, okay, let me experience that. And with Ivanova being Jewish in TKO, when I was young, I grew up in a town with no Jewish population. I didn't know a single Jewish person. I didn't know anything about their culture or religion or anything like that. I didn't know about Shiva. I didn't know anything about that. So TKO, for all its faults, introduced me and made me understand a world, a culture, a people that I had no understanding of before. This here should do the same for addiction issues, for alcoholism, but it fails.
No value to anything. It doesn't add any value to your experience as a viewer, giving you an insight into that. It doesn't add value to the character. It doesn't add value to the season arc.
No.
Nothing about this episode adds any value.
And I'm not being funny here, but the fact that Barney Gumble's short film that he made in The Simpsons, in which he's like, "Don't weep for me, I'm already dead," or whatever, has more emotional resonance about Barney Gumble's drinking issues than this episode does in 45 minutes for Garibaldi's is fucking damning.
Don't cry for me, I'm already dead.
On that note, do you want to move on to the spotlight?
Yeah, tell us all about the spotlight section of the show, Rachel.
So, in the spotlight section of Yum Yum 5, we pick a particular actor that we want to highlight, draw attention to.
Discuss their performance in this episode.
Discuss their performance.
And if we've seen them in anything else of note, or if they've been in anything else of note, whether it's relating to people who else is in this production or genre type of thing. So who are we discussing for this one, Rachel?
We are focusing on the actress that played Major Liana Kemmer.
Yes, the central foe to Garibaldi for the most part.
Played by Elaine Thomas.
Okay, so let's talk about it. What do you think about her in this?
I think she's bit shit, but not awful. I don't think I would go as far to say that she's awful, but she is really flat. And you can see how an actress would fall into that particular pit with this kind of character, because she's meant to be stuck up at the start, because she has this trauma and she's out for blood.
Oh, is she?
She says,
did they say that she's out for blood enough in the episode for me to know that?
Oh, I think they only did it twice.
Hey, can I tell you something funny? You know, she loosened up in the episode because she had her hair out at the end.
Yeah, I knew that you were going to bring that up. And I was like,
does that count as a visual representation of a redemption arc?
I think that it's meant to.
Can I tell you what I think? I think from a young age, I've always noticed this performance, and that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to say this. I don't want to poo-poo this actress's performance. I don't know if she's a good actress or not. I've only seen her in this. I looked through her career. She's only got like 6 things.
Yep.
But I don't want to poo-poo her because she did have energy in this and she delivered her lines with enough of a natural quality. My takeaway, and I've thought this since I first saw this episode, is she was miscast. I don't know who would be perfect for this role, but it isn't her. Mm. And that isn't to say she is an actress that can't act. I always just saw her as, this isn't the role that you should play in this show.
Yeah. She doesn't have a feel for the character in the way that other actors that we've done spotlights have, in particular. Like,
and she doesn't have a pedigree for us to look at and know that they can act better in comparison to the material. All we know is she's giving a weak performance in a weak script. But yeah. I do believe that this actress, if given a different role and better material, could possibly rise to the occasion. That may be a hot take, but I think she was just miscast, not a terrible actress. I think we've seen worse actors in this show at this point.
Oh, yeah. This was her first major role by the look of things.
Yeah. She had done a smattering of a couple of other things here and there. But...
So her first credit is Cafe American.
Mm-hmm.
As the model.
Oh.
Her second, because we can go through her entire career.
She's only got 6 things.
Mm-hmm. Was With Honors.
Mm-hmm. And then Babylon 5.
Where she was uncredited.
Oh, good.
As waitress.
So then she did this.
And then she did this.
How do you
And
think-
then she went back to being person staring in Psychic Detective. And then... her last 2 credits, she is also named for in Awake to Danger as Monica, which has a 4.9 average user score rating.
Mm-hmm.
And her last credit was in 1997. So her career lasted from 1993 to 1997.
In films and TV at least. Yeah. Maybe still doing theatre, but...
Yes, was The Bold and the Beautiful as Diane.
Okay, so I got a question to ask, and it may be answered very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Thus far in the show, with major roles like this, they usually get an actor who's fairly well known within the genre.
Yeah, or like somebody with a guest spot.
Or somebody with a well known, or somebody with more acting credit behind them.
Maybe they just ran out of money.
No, do you think that is the case? Or
I
not?
Think
or
that
do you think
might
that
have
they,
been a factor.
Or do you think
know.
That they thought this was the right person for the job? Because I think there's 2 factors at play. I think they thought this was the right person for the job, and they needed somebody of a certain age to play this role for the narrative to make sense. And so there may be actors who had to be the certain age or look the certain age that doesn't have the catalogue of work that other actors we've discussed in the spotlight do have.
Speaking of her age.
Yeah, how old is she in this, actually? I couldn't figure out how old, if she was like supposed to be 22 or if she was supposed to be 30-something.
I think she's meant to be like in... her late 20s, at least.
Oh, yeah.
Because she's made it to the rank of major. And when we see Garibaldi's image of her...
from 17 years ago, she's like 8 years old.
Yeah, I was like, at push, maybe 11.
Okay.
But I could not find her age.
A mystery to the internet.
So I was just like... like, there's just a vague description on IMDb that's copied on other websites.
Mm.
But then I went to a random one that had a listing for her biography. And I was like, oh, okay. So... maybe there'll be some extra details here. No, there's nothing. The only specific detail that was listed about this woman was non-vegetarian.
Oh. That may have changed as well. We don't know. She may be a vegetarian now.
That was it.
I don't know. This performance is often heralded by B5 fans as one of the bad ones. I don't think so. I really don't. I just think she didn't have anything to work with. And I really do think if she was, she would have been just adequate.
Here she's just below adequate. Some of those forum posts. And almost all of them made pretty much the exact same joke, which was, I would call her wooden, but that would be an insult to wood.
I demand you open a channel to Earth at once.
I'm a lieutenant commander in Earth Force Major. I do not take demands. If you have a request, I'll consider it.
Very well, then. I request that you open a channel to Earth Dome.
Request denied. Have a nice day.
That's it? What would you give this episode?
Yum.
Yum.
Oh, it's a yum. Yum being bad. Not yum, yum being good. This is a yum.
Yeah.
Let's hear what we'll be talking about next time on Babylon 5.
On the next Babylon 5.
We will be discussing episode 12, entitled By Any Means Necessary. Mm-hmm. Sinclair must bring Solomon-like wisdom.
Solomon-like wisdom.
To meditate disputes larger and small. Jakar and Londo find a new way to continue their running feud. The Large, a strike by dock workers, threatens the station.
That is such a fucking bizarre description of that episode. Go with the docking strike first. Don't make it sound like Sinclair has this spiritual plot on the side, which he doesn't. His plot is about dealing with the strike.
But he has to bring a level head both
issues. No, he has to bring Solomon-like wisdom. Thank you. All right, well, next time...
he does become a guru.
In a many a ways. So next time we'll be talking about that episode, episode 12, By Any Means Necessary. So yes, some people, this is where the viewing order starts to differentiate. If you're watching this via HBO Max, for instance, this is on the DVDs and the original airing order. This is the next episode. On HBO Max, they have Signs and Portents, but we are doing this the viewing order of the initial air date and what the DVDs have and so on and so forth. So just to clarify that for people out there, it's been a pleasure talking this shitty episode of B5 with you, Rachel. Where can people find us on the internet?
At Yum Yum Pod or Yum Yum Podcast on those various social medias, including
Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Reddit,
Tumblr even.
TikTok. So Yum Yum Podcast or Yum Yum Pod. All of that is in the description. You can email us with your questions, queries, thoughts, concerns, general thoughts on things discussed at yumyumpod@gmail.com.
And if you want to hear our general thoughts on other media properties, you can head over to our Patreon, where we have numerous extra shows.
Yes, we talk about movies on there. We talk about shows. We are doing a show on there in which we talk about, one at a time at random, the best and worst rated episodes of Star Trek according to the IMDb ratings. So please come on over to the Patreon and support us. It will be greatly appreciated. We have a Discord on that group as well that you get to be a part of, and you get to interact with other fans of the show and listeners of the show. Mm-hmm. So it will be greatly appreciated. Rachel, what do we say?
Good eating to you.
Good eating to you, Rachel.